Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off.
They've got all the seasons, loads of free space to roam, free universal healthcare, better work-life balance, paid maternity leave. The maple syrup is pretty amazing. And you get more for your money if you're a U.S. citizen. I'm talking about Canada in this episode. Brandon Miller, a certified immigration expert, is sharing why moving to Canada and getting a second passport might be the best move you make.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Come to Game, where we flip the script on the old-school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
I have been so intrigued by this idea of a second passport for quite some time. I always thought about moving overseas to Europe, but Canada is much closer, and honestly, has a lot of financial benefits. And I will admit to you, a guilty pleasure, I have been a little bit of an addict of House Hunters International during quarantine. I've probably watched over the last year, I think every season and every episode. And I just never thought about Canada, but maybe Canada might be the answer. There are over 100 immigration pathways into Canada, but you gotta know which one is best for you. That's where Brandon comes in. He can help you plan the best way, avoid all the mistakes, get settled in Canada, and figure out your way around some truly Canadian pronunciations, like my favorite, sorry. I'm probably not saying that right, but that is my best Canada impersonation. So are you curious? Here is Brandon to share how you can make your dream of a second passport come true and why that might make sense in the first place. Brandon, it is so good to have you on the show. You're coming all the way from Canada to us today. So thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
This is definitely an episode that I have been really excited about. I've obviously been very curious about the idea of moving abroad, moving to Canada. So I think it's such great timing to talk about this. And I just want to go kind of straight in there. Why do you think Canada is a viable option for building a better life? What makes Canada worthy of that title?
I think it's very much a personal decision for a lot of people. However, some of the things that we hear is depending on who wants to come here, they're looking at it for worker mobility. They're looking maybe longer term for healthcare. They're looking at the ability to access some of the education, some of the retirement benefits, things like that. But then I hear other things like global warming, for instance. We hear about, people are concerned about the environment and what that's going to look like. And they're seeing a lot of these storms crop up and things like that. So they want to move a little bit more inland. And I've even had people say things like, come up with different moral issues that they're looking at where things are going. So they want to be in a different environment. Some of the other issues that we can see as well is, financial. A lot of times people are looking at it in terms of how they can, preserve wealth or for taxation purposes as well.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the financial aspect. What are some of the differences? I would imagine there are a lot, but differences financially speaking, somebody living in the U.S., somebody living in Canada, what do we need to know about money that's different in Canada?
Well, first off, the American dollar goes a lot farther up here. So, bang for the buck in that respect. Currently, if I believe it's about 30 points that you're making. So for every dollar Canadian that you have, you're getting about $1.28. For every dollar U.S. that you have, you're getting $1.28 Canadian. You can get access to a lot of the different products and different things that you'd get anywhere else in the U.S. So that's not an issue. But again, taxation, I think, is the biggest one for a lot of people. Our taxes, well, a lot of people think that it's quite high. It's actually not, because there's a lot of different ways and different government programs that you can take advantage of where it actually equals out. And one of the biggest differences is that as a Canadian, I can actually go and I can travel and become a non-resident. There's a test that you can go through. So when I lived overseas for a number of years, I actually wasn't filing a tax return here, which is very different from the U.S. system where you're taxable worldwide, whereas in Canada, you're taxed on your residency. So that's the major difference that comes to my mind right off the bat.
Wow. Yeah, that definitely does make a difference. I can say pretty profoundly that before last year, my husband and I were thinking, we should move abroad. We need to get out of the United States, see something different. But that tax issue always came up because of essentially potentially double taxation. So I think that's a really interesting point in the favor of Canada.
Do you mind if I just say one point to that? One thing when you're looking at American and Canada, there is a tax treaty that exists between Canada and the U.S., and that's why it's very favorable for a lot of people that will come here, Americans that will come here, because you're not going to be double taxed. What's going to happen is you would pay the difference of the tax. So if you file a tax return here, what will happen is that tax return in the U.S., if you pay tax here, you won't have to pay. You'll only have to pay the difference if you owe tax in the U.S.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. So that's actually a very big benefit for Americans here.
I like that. And now I've been to Canada a few times, and I will say I was probably in more of the larger cities, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, but it was definitely more expensive cost of living wise. And I live in Los Angeles, so mm-hmm. we're in a really high cost of living. Do you find that most of Canada is higher cost of living than the U.S., or once you get out of those bigger cities, things are a little bit more affordable?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So some of the bigger cities are very expensive, and you know, if you've been up to Vancouver, I always joke with people. I ask them, do you know what BC stands for? And everyone's like, yeah, it's British Columbia. I'm like, no, actually, it stands for bring cash, because it's very expensive.
True, so very true.
It is. It's one of the most expensive places to live, but it's you know, it's beautiful. You're on the ocean. You can be down at the beach in the morning and skiing at night. So it's very nice in that respect. Toronto's pretty pricey, as is Montreal is getting a little bit more pricey. But if you start, like I live north of the city, I live in a, you know, it's a reasonable place to live. And it's actually, you know, it's a nice place to live, but there's costs aren't exactly that high. And I still have access to the city. But if you're looking at different areas of Canada, I always tell people to look east, you know, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, even PEI, really great cost of living. A lot of people, what they can do, and I've had some clients do this, is that they've moved out of Toronto, they've sold their house, which has appreciated a lot, taken a job out east, and it's, you know, and now they're living mortgage free and have more than enough money in the bank just from that one move. So there are some really good places to live. You still have access to a lot of the different cities and the you know, depending on the lifestyle that you want to lead, you have all of that stuff there.
I like that. Yeah, very nice. I mean, I will say every time I was in Canada, just blown away by the beauty, just unbelievable sheer beauty. I had the lucky opportunity to take a train from Seattle mm-hmm. all the way up through Banff. And oh, yeah. I mean, it was just miraculous what yeah. you saw, and just so peaceful and so stunning. I think that's one of the things about Canada that always really stands out to me is just, I know we have beauty obviously here in the U.S., but it's a lot less populated in Canada. And so yes. there's just these remote areas. They literally take your breath away.
Yeah, that's actually that's a very envious trip. That's a fantastic trip. You know, just that, just the scenery and whatnot and the wildlife and everything. You know, it's funny you say that about the being a little bit more sparsely populated. So currently, you know, the population for all of Canada is about 38 million people. So it's not that much. We have a bigger land area than the continental U.S. But 80% of the population lives within 200 kilometers of the U.S. border.
Wow.
So once you start getting a little bit north of that, like, you know, you can hop in the car and in a couple hours you can be, you know, pretty much you could be downtown Toronto, and in a couple hours, 2-3 hours, you can be in the middle of nowhere. So it's great.
Yeah, wow. Well, talk to me a little bit about the reality of how easy would it be to move to Canada? What are the steps? What are the process that you would go through?
That's awesome. I love this question. Okay, and you can't see me right now, but I've got like the biggest smile on my face. So, okay, so one of the things that I always tell people, I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I created a system. I call it the Immigration Success System, and it's basically three phases, and it's planning, implementation, and settlement. Now, what I've seen because of running my immigration legal practice, obviously we have a plan and we implement that. I've always been telling people to plan their settlement and to plan what they're doing here. And the reason that that's important is because prior to me doing immigration legal work, I was helping people get settled in. And I saw people that weren't doing so well, and I saw others doing absolutely amazingly well. And what it really boiled down to was them educating themselves and understanding exactly what they're going to do when they get here. So in terms of the first step, you have to plan it. You have to plan not only the immigration application, you have to plan what you're gonna do when you get here, but you also have to plan what your life's gonna be like. And I think it's actually a very important, but also fun step, because you basically get to design your life. I'm working with a number of people from the US right now, and one of the things that I tell them is, I'm like, listen, if you're coming up here, think about what type of life you want. So for instance, one of the things that I do is I bring people on from different areas of Canada, and I have them say what it's like to live in that area in their own words. And I have my group get together and they get to take the benefit of that. It's always very interesting because people actually get a perspective and they understand how they can design their life around that. So that's the first thing that I tell people, is just plan and figure all that out. Then the second thing is that they have to decide, like, you know, where am I going to live? What type of job do I want? Is my job portable in the US? Can I come up here and spend the summers working in Canada and then go back to the US and maybe stay in Florida for the winter if I'm not much of a winter person, or do it the opposite? And then on top of that, you just have to be able to implement and put that together. So it's generally pretty easy. And normally the people that it's easy for is if you're under 35, you have a university education, you have at least 1 year of skilled work experience. So, you know, even working in an office as a receptionist or an administrative assistant is considered skilled work experience. Obviously no criminal record, and i.e. a drinking and driving charge can be an eliminator. But basically, if somebody can speak English, has post-secondary education and 1 year of skilled work experience, and is under the age of 30, it's pretty easy to actually get here.
What about the age? Is that like just Canada specifically targeting a younger demographic to immigrate?
Yeah, so generally what they do is they're looking for people under 30. And the reason is, it's funny, I call it a bit of a Ponzi scheme. And it's kind of like we have these really great retirement benefits. So the retirement benefits, we have these pension plans, old age security, we have drug benefits, we have the free healthcare, which is always very popular with my American clients. All of these different things. So in order to keep those benefits going, we need people that are actually going to continue to work. So bringing in, we like the US, we have the baby boomer population, and they're getting to the age now where they're starting to retire. So I believe it was back in the 1970s, there was five workers to every one retiree. Now we're down to three workers to every one retiree. And if we don't actually bring in more people, because the levels of people that we're bringing in currently are we haven't seen these levels for generations. And the reason is because they don't want that to get down to two workers for every one retiree, because then the great benefits that we have here wouldn't be sustainable. So they want to really target. Yeah. So they want to target that younger population to keep the Ponzi scheme going, so to speak. Right. So
is it unrealistic that you could immigrate if you were over that age, or are there just more hoops you have to jump through?
There's just more hoops. I have people in their 40s and 50s, and generally I've been able to successfully bring them here. However, where it gets a little tricky is that they, they're going to have to do either maybe a business stream. So if somebody owns a company, for instance, there's different ways through, like the old NAFTA or the USMCA or CUSMA, as we call it. I don't think we figured out the name yet for that. Because we have that agreement between the US and Canada, there's a lot more that a lot of advantages for Americans. Another example is that, getting Canadian education is a very popular route. One of the benefits that only Americans have, as opposed to any other country in the world, is that they can actually file their applications at the border. So you can literally apply to a school here, hop in your car, drive up to the border, present a package, and they'll hand you the study permit and subsequent work permit on the spot.
Wow.
Which is, it's a lot of people don't know that, but it's actually, if you plan it properly and you know what's required, then you can actually get that stuff done.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. "Talkin' Money" under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. We have an Ask Shauna. This one comes from Janelle. Janelle says, "Hi, Shauna. I have a question about credit cards. I've always been leery of them, and then I listened to your show and became comfy that I could use it like a debit card and do it smartly. I'm proud to say that I have been doing that for over a year now, and I'm about to make a big purchase and will need to pay off my credit card over a few months, which I have prepared for. But you mentioned that I could ask my credit card company to lower my APR. I'm curious, how often do they agree to this, and is there anything I should say? Thanks again for being my money wizard. I love all the guests on the show and love hearing about all the topics. Keep it going." Janelle, this is a great question. I'm so glad you brought it up because, there are some tricks when it comes to credit card, but the number one thing is you have to ask the question, and most of us just don't ask the questions, and it's somehow like we're afraid to call our credit card companies, but it's not like calling the IRS, or at least I know if I have to call the IRS, I get a little bit of a panicked feeling. Credit card company is a little bit different. So I was just reading this survey that came out from LendingTree, and they were saying that 83% of cardholders who asked to have their APR lowered were successful. Those are great odds. 83% is pretty close to 100 in my book. So what are you asking for? That's a great question. I don't think there's really a way to do this wrong, except if you're just an a-hole on the phone with a credit card company. But what you're simply just saying is, hey, I like to use your card. I would like to ask for an APR reduction. I'm considering moving to another card that has a lower APR. Whether you are or not doesn't matter. You don't have to tell them that, okay? But that's what you're saying. I want to stay with your card, but there's another card with a lower APR. Would you be willing to reduce the APR on my credit card? If you're a loyal customer and you've been paying your bills on time, I'm pretty confident you're going to end up in these 83% numbers. But, there's always a chance it could be a no, and you should be prepared for that, but you just don't know if you don't ask the question. And this survey also pointed out something really interesting, that women were far more likely to ask for all the breaks than in past years, and in most cases were more likely to have them granted than in previous years. So I don't know what's going on there, but I'm feeling really good that women are feeling empowered to call and try, and it's not even negotiate, it's just literally asking the question, can I get my APR lowered? And it makes such a difference if you're going to carry a balance on the credit card, because that means that any money over the minimum payment that you're going to pay off that credit card debt is really making strides, right? The lower our interest rate, the faster we're going to get this debt paid off. And also, while you're at it, this survey also said that 92% of people asked for a waived or lowered annual fee and were successful. And I've talked about this on the show a lot. If you have a credit card that has an annual fee, here's what I do. I wait for the annual fee to charge on my card. For instance, I have one card that charges a $95 fee like every May. So I have a calendar reminder, and once that annual fee hits my card, I call them and say, hey, you know, the annual fee just hit. I like your card, but I'm thinking about moving to another one that does not have an annual fee. Is there any way I could get the fee removed? Now, I've always had it removed, but I do know some people where they haven't had it removed, but it's been lowered. So lowered is still winning in my game, right? It's not having to pay that full amount for a fee. So the moral of the story here, Janelle, is yes, ask for it. Ask the questions. You're not guaranteed that you're going to get a lower APR or have your annual fee waived, but you got a pretty good shot at making it happen, especially this year and probably the next couple of years with the economy still kind of getting back on its feet. So ask the question, and it's just extra money that you can use towards other things. Like, why pay the fee if you don't have to? I probably can guarantee you have something better to do with $95 than pay a silly credit card annual fee. So Janelle, great question. Awesome question. If you have a question just like Janelle, just go to the show notes right now. There's a link right there. You can go over to the Ask Shauna on our website. Just fill in with your question. You can even keep it anonymous, and I'd love to get your question answered. And how has the last year changed things with COVID? Because I know the borders have been closed. So How long would people have to wait before they would start to entertain the immigration process at this point?
That's a really good question, and it's a question that we get a lot. So I'll give you my opinion on it. So obviously it's going to be based on the vaccine rollout and whatnot. I think the U.S. has been very aggressive in terms of the vaccinations, and hopefully that's going to get sorted out by the summer 2021. It's funny, I have that, I mentioned I had that group of American clients that we meet within my network there every week. We do different things, and we've got a bit of a pool going. My pool was, as I would see that the borders opening around August, some people were saying a little bit later, but I think that it's going to open up, relatively soon, to non-discretionary travel. People can still come here, like somebody who wants to come as a student. And a lot of people don't know this. The borders are closed, but to non-discretionary travel. So you can't come up and say, yeah, I'm coming for vacation. But if you drove up to the border and said, I'm going to school, I have to start in September, and you have all of the stuff, you will get through the border.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so that's one thing that people, there's so many different, yes, it's closed, but scenarios.
asterisk.
Right? So it's actually not really... it's not really closed in that respect. But in terms of planning, I would see it actually return a little bit more to normal within probably in the next 6 months. But there's a lot of things that people can do right now. A lot of things that you can do to plan right now is doing the English test, doing the educational assessments, all of these little things, or at least just crafting your plan so that you know if it's something that's viable. So I have a number of people that are putting that in place. I can tell you right now, just with the sheer number of people in the U.S. right now that have contacted me over the last little bit, it's been something I haven't seen in the last 10 years. So
says something, right?
It does. It does. And I think... it's something that is exciting because I think that there's a lot of, like, when you look at moving, and I'm speaking from experience because I lived overseas for 15 years, you still want those comforts of home. And I think it's very easy for somebody from the U.S. to get those here in Canada while absorbing all of the benefits, while not being so far away from your home that you can, hop in the car or just hop on a plane for a couple hours and be back home. Right? Because home is always going to be home. So it's very close. You have all those conveniences, but there's so many other benefits that are available to ride both sides of the border.
I like that. And, so many I would say people under 50, more or less, but, you know, probably goes for almost any generation these days, are running their own business. You know, they're running everything virtually. They're making money in lots of various different ways. Is it still, you know, could you still come to Canada and be able to run your business in that fashion?
100%. I've got a ton of people that I'm working with that are doing exactly that. And the best part of that is that you can actually get your permanent residence here. There's so many different incentives for small businesses here. There was so much support. Look, I'm a small business. I have a team of about seven of us. And, you know, just the government support that we got throughout COVID has been remarkable. I wouldn't have survived if I didn't have that. So there's a lot of different support for small business. I know a lot of people would argue with me on that. But there's if you know how to access the different resources, you can do that. From a taxation point of view, depending if you have a really smart, if you invest in your accounting professional, there's a number of different ways that you can take advantage of the cross-border trading and tax issues, having different entities set up and whatnot to be able to do that. So I work with a number of people that are already doing that. They can come here, they can work, and, you know, they spend, you know, 6 months here, do their stuff. They have a place in, you know, off the beaten track, if you will. You know, one of the things that they only need is basically the internet connection. Right. And that's it. So yeah, it's in a very exciting world we live in.
Right. I know. I think, yeah. I mean, it just is, it's totally, well, my mind was totally changed before COVID, but now even more so. I mean, we live in Los Angeles. We're actually looking to move out of Los Angeles this summer because we want nature. We want to be able to have a different quality of life, and you can do that when you work remotely. And I think that, again, that goes back to Canada's beauty, that you could live someplace just stunning and still be able to earn money and operate your business. I think that's just really exciting.
Yeah, it truly is. And again, you know, the US and Canada share so much in common, and that's the beauty of it. And I've traveled extensively throughout the U.S. I've been to about 26 states, which I think is extensively, but I hadn't been to the West Coast in all that time, and I just discovered it over the last couple of years. Fantastic quality of life out there, and there's so many little nooks that I'm loving exploring. So, again, I think that's the beauty of it, where a lot of times for an American coming to Canada or for a Canadian going to the U.S., it's not that. That's not that hard of a stretch, culturally and convenience wise.
And do a lot of people who immigrate to Canada kind of live that dual life that you were talking about, where they spend some of the time in the U.S., some of the time in Canada, and kind of flip flop around that way?
100%. One of the things that we're seeing is, especially with the younger crowd, is that they're looking to, you know, really, if you're thinking ahead, right, and a lot of times what we see is that people start getting this into their head around 35 to 40. And I always say to people, I'm like, geez, if I could just speak to these people like 10 years ago and say, hey, you've got all of these great benefits that are available to you, right?
Yeah.
You can come here, you can stay here for 3 years after you get your permanent residency, and then you get a passport. That passport opens up so many different worker mobility avenues for people. They can go work in Europe. They can go work in different countries around Asia. It opens up, international experience, working holiday visas, so they can travel with that passport to different areas. It opens up a number of different things. The other thing on top of it, speaking more long term, is that, you know, healthcare is really, really the thing that I hear a lot.
Yeah,
like a lot. We have free healthcare, and you know, it's funny. About a week ago, there was a survey that was done. I think it was Time that did it. I can't remember. It was a major publication, but there was a big survey, and they were looking at the hospitals around the world. And Toronto General ended up as the top four hospital in the world. And it was behind the likes of like the, I was floored. And in the top 10, there was, in the top 50, there was a number of Canadian hospitals, Sunnybrook and whatnot. So like, you know, we're right behind like the Mayo Clinic and the Boston, hospital in Boston there. You know, like world-class hotels hotels.
Hey, you know, at these days, hospital, hotel, it's,
Yeah, but I just, what I find interesting about that is a lot of people, like they slag the healthcare system. It's like, oh, it's free. It's not very good. And it's like, well, it's free and it's also very good. So that was very exciting to see. Those are some of the issues. And a lot of people don't start thinking about that until later on. But again, you know, coming to school or just filing a direct application, spending a little bit of time. Once you get your passport, you know, you could take off for 20 years and then you could come back and retire here if you wanted.
The second passport idea is something I've been looking into it for quite some time. You've talked about like some of the benefits of having a second passport, but is that different than if I was a Canadian passport holder and had this passport versus being a U.S. citizen having a passport? Like, how does that mobility differentiate between those two countries?
So, for instance, I when I was alluding to Europe, so we have an agreement with Europe called the Comprehensive European Trade Agreement, and there's worker mobility provisions in there similar to what NAFTA or the USMCA has now. So we have more of those treaties. Like there's Colombia is one of them. Chile and Peru, the TPP, which I believe that you guys will re-sign on to. There was worker provisions in there, which access the Asia Pacific region. And the European one is a big one for a lot of people. So depending on how those agreements work and that passport, that gives you access to those worker mobility agreements. So that's one of the benefits there. Again, I think that having a U.S. passport and a Canadian passport is a very, very powerful tool for people to have. The biggest issue and what you read about a lot of times when you start talking about passports and holding alternative citizenships and whatnot, it generally boils down to the, I want to get out of my taxes I'm giving up my passport and all of that stuff. I don't really make that argument as much. I know that there's a lot of things there, but I think having the ability to have both, and if you have really smart professionals, you don't have to go to those extremes. But some people do. You know, there's different theories on all of that and ways to run and do it. But I don't think it leads to some sort of permanence, which is something that, a lot of people do like, permanence and stability and whatnot. But, and I think with COVID, because it's very topical these days, it's highlighted a lot of the kind of weaknesses in the different systems. But again, I think there's advantages to be had on both sides of the fence, right?
Yeah.
And having the ability to move there. One of the ones that I don't want to go toe to toe with an economist on this one, but one of the things that I've seen is generally like the slowdown in 2008 when we were hitting different recessions and slowdowns, and again in 2018. Normally the trend is, and again, take this with a grain of salt, is that things slow down in the US, but then there's a ripple effect, and that ripple effect generally tends to come later to Canada. So, if something starts slowing down, you have the ability to kind of pick up and like literally not skip a beat and go find something somewhere else and then kind of settle that in. So you might be able to lessen some of those different impacts because it gives you options.
And options, I think, is one of the best things to have in life.
Yeah. So it really opens up the options. And what I also find is that with COVID, and again, I never tie this to politics, but it seems to always get tied to it when people are like, oh, I'm leaving, I'm doing this. I literally tell people, I'm like, that's not really a good reason to kind of pick up and go. You really should think about what you're going to get out of it and do all of that. But what I find is that it provides, when a lot of people want the ability to move, a lot of other people are trying to do the same thing. And it's all about planning ahead so that you have that in your back pocket. Now, coming from a Western country like Canada or the US, we don't actually think of it this way. But I can tell you there's a lot of countries around the world, example, China, for instance, there's a lot of people, they see that alternative passport or a way to put money somewhere securely is something that is part of their planning and something that's actually done very regularly. We don't tend to do that in a lot of the Western countries as much, but there's a lot of countries that will think about it that way.
It's so fascinating when you really start to like dig down.
Yeah.
And think about it. Well, let's say that Canada is on our radar. We're like super interested after listening to you. What are some of the action steps we should take to even get the process started?
So one of the things that I would suggest is, you know, quite frankly, if your listeners just want to email me, they can just drop me an email and then I can direct them, and I have no problem doing that. And also, it's funny, as I was telling you, I haven't done a lot of podcasts, but one of the things that I did is I have a book. It's called Second Passport, and it's your guide to a secure alternative home for you and your family, just in case. And you know what's so funny about that is when I wrote this, this was done a few years ago, and the just in case, somebody said, oh, you should put just in case. And I was like, yeah, okay, why not, just in case. It's so topical today.
Totally.
Yeah, but again, if anybody wants to reach out, they can just email me at brandon@mysecondpassport.ca. And I'll shoot them a digital copy of my book, and I can point them in the right direction. So they can get started that way.
I love it. And just tell me real quick, like, what is it like to work with like an immigration consultant like yourself? Like, how do you cut through some of the sticky bits of the immigration process?
Oh man. Oh, you're making me so excited with these questions. I love it. No, I'm serious. It's such a good question, because a lot of people, they get on the internet and they start looking around. They're like, oh, it's all here. And it's like, no, it's not all there. That's the internet. Like, there's this thing called the Immigration Refugee Protection Act. That's the law. That's what you got to follow. So I, you know, again, what we do is we put together the applications. I always tell people that I want to get them the most direct route to what they want. I do it in a cost-effective manner, and I minimize all of their headaches. So as we know, dealing with any government bureaucracy, it has its challenges, and the immigration department is no different. You know, when we're representing a file, my clients, you know, don't even talk to the immigration department. Actually, to be honest, I bar them from talking to them. I want the immigration department to talk to me. Because a lot of times, if people start filing stuff on their own, they can actually, you know, they think, oh, I'm being helpful. And it's like, no, you're not. You're giving the immigration officer enough rope to hang you with there, because they're basically just trying to dot their I's and cross their T's. You want to manage things. But a lot of times people will come to me. I have three different people that will come. There's people that are planning ahead. There's people that go and try it themselves and go, whoa, what happened here? I just got this returned. And then there's people that are, you know, come crying, and I have a tissue box in my office because they've done so much damage. And sometimes I can fix them, and unfortunately sometimes I can't. But you know, we basically take away all the pains from doing it yourself and having to deal with that painful bureaucracy that we have in dealing with any government department.
Yes, and all the way around, no matter what you're dealing with, if you can have someone help you cut through the bureaucracy, definitely, definitely worthwhile. Well, Brandon, this has been so fantastic. I know we've already told listeners, but let's tell them again where they could go to connect with you and find out more information about your services.
Sure. They can email me at brandon@mysecondpassport.ca. That's my personal email. I don't have other people, emailing, and it doesn't put you into some sort of sequence. That goes directly to me. And as well, if anybody emails and says that they've listened to this podcast, tell them just to request a book. You can, I'll send them a copy. And that's a really great guide, because it really is over 10 years of my experiences watching people come here, be successful, and I give them all of the steps on how to go from, you know, hey, I want to go to Canada, to here's your second passport.
I don't know. What do you think? What do you think about the idea of a second passport? I think it's kind of sexy, if you will. I think it might be a really smart financial move. We don't know what's on the horizon. We don't know, you know, politics, healthcare, costs of living. We don't know what's going to happen. So to me, a second passport is the idea of having options. And I am a big fan of options. So if you're interested, definitely grab a copy of Brandon's book, and he's super open to answering any questions. So even if you have the smallest question, I would definitely take him up on his offer. Thank you so much for checking out this episode. If you loved it, here's two ways you can support the podcast. Share this episode with friends, family members, share it on social media, and also head on over to iTunes and leave a review for the podcast. Let me know how this podcast has helped you on your money journey. I'll see you back here in a few days for a brand new episode.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com, where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.